Tuesday, April 30th, and our guest today is so freaking cool. Here's a taste.
And it's hard in today's world. You know, they got nine people around them. They all got nine people telling them different things. And, you know, they all got their own hitting coach. They all got their own agent. They got the agent's agent. They got the marketing agent. They got the, you know, the wife.
Social media agent.
Yeah. And the wife's got an agent and her social media agent. You know? And I'm in love.
Boom, coming in hot, Chich. What's going on, dude? I'm really, really looking forward to today's guest, brother.
Dude, I have not had more fun researching a guest than I did with this guy. First of all, the story's insane. Secondly, I saw a pep talk he gave a baseball team. I thought I was watching the Green Bay Packers Hard Knocks, dude. That intensity is the greatest. I'm really excited for you guys to swap tales today,
dude. Dude, this is a buddy of mine that, you know, obviously being in this industry, you get to know a lot of people, but I go back with Murph way back to his Arizona State days. But let's give him his props first. Coach Notre Dame from 88 to 94, then went to Arizona State 95 to 2009, was Pac-10 Coach of the Year four times, went to the College World Series four times, then went into minor league coaching, was the interim manager for the Padres 2015, and then his man Craig Counsell said, hey, come be the bench coach, we need somebody good next to me, 16 to 23 with the Brewers, and then now is the manager of the Brewers 2024, one of the best baseball guys and probably personalities the game's ever seen. Let's bring him in, baby. My man Pat Murphy, what's up, Murph?
Oh, what's going on, guys?
How's everything going, man?
Oh, it's going. It's going. It's, going. It's been great. It's been great in so many ways. As you know, man, it's day to day, man. It's day to day.
Yeah, it's
this might be my last one. So
dude. Murph, you know what, dude? One thing that, you know, I love about you is you truly are like that old school mentality, you know, guy that's been in the game when it was awesome. I still think it is awesome now too. But, you know, for you guys with the Brewers, man, like you getting this opportunity to be the manager when Counts went to the Cubs and you got the opportunity, can you tell me about that? Where were you when you were hired? How'd you feel about it? You know, everything.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough to be in touch with Counts every day. And you know, we've had almost a 40-year relationship since he was a junior in high school. So that'll never change. And so we were in contact, and he was deciding what he was going to do. And I was in contact with the Brewers about what they felt they wanted to do. And it really was an easy time. It wasn't anything intense. I was feeling for Counts a little bit because I knew that, you know, he was a first rounder, you know,
right.
He had never been that, you know, he had been a great major league player and a contributor and two World Series rings. And everybody knew him because he was such a great clubhouse guy and such a contributor, but he had never been a first rounder. He had never been a free agent with
the guy,
tag, right. You know? So I felt for him going through that. That's not easy if you've never done it. And he was 50 at the time doing it, or however old he is. So it's like, you know, I thought he handled it really well, as best he could. No, none of those are perfect. And then the Brewers and I got talking, and, you know, I had a choice to make. And I feel very grateful, really, really, really lucky, Case. You think about it, you know, like, a lot of people don't like me, you know, let's be honest.
That's not true, Murph. That's not true.
No, I got a great list of enemies, man. It's a great list, and I think it's important to have one of those. But, I didn't know which direction the Brewers were going in, and I wasn't pushing real hard. I just told them, hey, this is what I'd love to do if you want to give me that opportunity. If not, you know, I'll go with Counts. But, this has been great. I've learned a lot, and I continue to learn. I'm under construction, and I dig it.
Yeah. Well, dude, we've gotten a chance to talk to a lot of guys on the team, and I just ran into Wade Miley the other day. And, I know big Wade, you know, big old country Wade, you know, I know you were a big reason, you know, he came back to the Brewers this year and, you know, just being with you. But if, you know, for you, you know, as the bench coach, you know, I look back at my time in the big leagues and I go, hey, go talk to the bench coach. Cause your relationship with the manager, sometimes you're like, all right, I don't really want to tell him this, but I could tell the bench coach and maybe he'll tell the manager. You know what I mean? Like, so it's a different relationship. So, you know, for you, how have you been able to like navigate that? Because for what, 7, 8 years, you're the guy that probably these guys are leaning on. Now you're the top dog. So how have you been able to kind of manage that relationship?
I try not to change it too much. I try not to act like I'm the top dog. I do call myself the shot caller. Maybe I remind them every, yeah, you know I'm the shot caller, right? But I really try to make it about the player. It's not about me. It's not about my leadership. You know, I think people that have tried too hard at that stuff, and you know, I've been doing this a long time, Case, and I've been the leader most years I've done it. And I've just noticed in the big leagues, like, it doesn't pay to try to control or try to be noticed or try to get credit. I think what it pays is to have a good staff, to trust your staff, hold your staff accountable, but trust the players and build bonds with the players that are authentic and real and talk about real stuff. So the roles change some, I guess. I'm in a lot more meetings, you know, and things like that. But I'm open to that. You know, it's all about collaboration. It really is. I mean, that's how you make a good business run. So yeah. I think it's the way to go.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your club a little bit because, man, you guys are playing so well. You're 17-11 right now. You're a half game out of the Cubs. But, you know, you've had a bunch of guys on the injured list. Obviously, Yelich got off to a hot start, is back. No, he's on the IL. Devin Williams out for the year, probably the best closer in baseball. Wade Miley's, you know, might be, you know, out for the year. Who knows where he's at? Brandon Woodruff obviously came in. Garrett Mitchell. There's a lot of big names that have been down for you guys, but you're kind of still plugging along. You know, how have you been able to do that? And, you know, you also have 12 players on their first opening day roster too. So like you're with a lot of young dudes, you know, how do you connect with those guys and how have you been able to do it so far, Murph?
I don't know that I connect with those guys very well. They're so young. but here's the thing, you know, like that young energy means something. You can use that. I mean, that's a resource. And then we have great pillars. You know, if you've met Rhys Hoskins, this dude is Pee-wee is a, he's a dude, you know what I mean? And he knows how to live his life and he knows how to care about others. You mentioned Miley, you know, you mentioned Devin, he's not out for the year, by the way, but okay. It'll be our trade deadline acquisition. You know what I mean? Like he'll be ready about that.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll be okay. That's good.
And then, you know, Yelich is the right dude. You know, you're talking about Willy Adames. He's the right guy. He brings it every day. This Contreras kid's coming into his own. He's one of our pillars. So when you think of that, Freddie Peralta, been around long enough.
Yeah.
He does it right. When you have those five pillars or six pillars, the young guys look up to him. And we emphasize that. And we emphasize that, you know, have the awareness, you young guys, of what it's going to take for you guys to stay here. You know, don't fall into, well, I can't do this because it's the big leagues. No, bull crap. You've got to lay it on the line, man. And it's got to be about the boys. And I think the leadership on the team has put us in this spot. Our injuries are just, it's 9 of our top 15 pitchers, and we already had lost 3 pitchers out of our rotation, really 4 out of our rotation coming into the season. And 9 of our top 16 maybe are out. And we're throwing guys that, you know, were the first cut in camp, you know, and they're getting starts. So it's a credit to the guys, the way they've pulled together. And it's been a rough schedule too. It's not been an easy one. Now, we've been in 28 games, 26 of them we've had the winning or tying run in the ninth inning in 26 of 28. It's just that Yankees kicked our ass twice the last 2 days, and that's the only two games we weren't in. Wow. So I'm proud of the competition in the first month, and you can't coast uphill. So, we've got an uphill battle. There's no question.
Yeah. Well, philosophically speaking, on the offensive side, and I got some stats here that Sean's going to love. I bet both of you guys are going to love. You guys are fourth in the majors in batting average. You guys are third in the majors in stolen bases. And you guys are ninth in the majors in RBIs. And those are three stats that kind of people started trying to push out. They don't matter. They don't do that kind of thing. But you guys play the game the way, I don't know, I think we all grew up playing, especially a professional baseball player like Sean. Do you instill that philosophy in those guys? And do you like
that? What we've preached is win tonight. Okay. I don't care about where we rank in anything. You know what I mean? To be honest with you, I care about, are we prepared to play tonight, in the present, now, tonight? If we're prepared to play tonight, we got a shot. And being prepared is having your mind, singular focus. You can't be divided. If you got 299 home runs, you can't be thinking about, oh God, I got to get 300. That's BS. If you're hitting 299, the difference between 299 and 300 is enormous if you let it be. Right. Or you say, I got to win tonight for the boys. We're going out after this thing. And it's hard in today's world. You know, they got nine people around them. They all got nine people telling them different things. And, they all got their own hitting coach. They all got their own agent. They got the agent's agent. They got the marketing agent. They got the, the wife.
Social media agent.
Yeah. And the wife's got an agent and her social media agent. And it's like, at some point, we're just a bunch of kids playing a game. And we got to go about it with real competitive nature. Like, we always are learning about how to compete. And you're going to be learning on how to compete until you're after the game. If you ask Sean Casey, like, man, would you like to go back into the game knowing what you know now? Hell yes, I would. Yeah. Because as a 22-year-old, you were good then, but think of what you would be if you know now. So if we stay with that mindset of just, Wade Miley's a better pitcher than he was way back when.
It's incredible.
But it's credit to him. He knows the numbers. He knows the analytics. He knows the properties of his pitches. He knows about working out now. He knows about nutrition. And this guy has continued in his own way. He tries to fool you, but in his own way, he's super interested in being better. He's 46 or whatever he is. You know what I mean? Like, he's interested. He always gives me shit about my age, so I'm not backing off. I had him on the bag yesterday. He was hitting the bag with me yesterday, and he's a little stiff, but he's strong and quick. The kid is just
with the boxing bag.
Yeah.
Murph, let's stay there for a second, because I was one of the things I had, because I was obviously looking at a couple things, but I think early on, before you became a baseball coach, you fell into this industry, you wanted to be a boxer. Am I correct by saying that? For a couple things, how has that mentality, the boxing mentality, help you as a coach? And obviously, you're still doing a little bit of that, staying in shape.
I'll tell you what, I was never a great fighter. It would have been a real dumb move, and I wouldn't have been able to have this podcast because I took a lot of shots. But I did some amateur fighting and I loved it, and I continue to work out that way here and there, and I love showing people and that type of thing. And as an old guy, I can handle myself against guys my age. I can win most of that. You know what I mean? But the thing I think about is, when you think about hitting, for instance, it's very similar. The rotational movement, the linear movement at the same time with your hands, the timing of it. Boxing is timing. It's like you're a counterpuncher. You don't have the weapon in your hand. They have the weapon. They have the ball. And it's reaction. And boxing is the same way. And you have to be ready. You have to be clear, because you can't be thinking in that sport. I promise you, there's no thinking allowed. You get knocked on your ass. Right. So it's like, ready, clear, and boom, respond, you know, and get your best one off with timing and precision. And then bam, you're right back to it. You're like a sniper. Right. And I think that people misconstrue sometimes that sport, you know, as being, you know, barbaric and all that. And to some extent, it probably is. But the part that I resonate with is it's very similar to hitting. It's that rotational movement. It's a foundation from the legs. It's precision. It's a response. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. And also that I love that one shot mentality, one pitch mentality. It's just a mentality to stay in the present, the right. breath, you know, the great boxers, they're slow and then bam, explosive. Kind of the same thing as a hitter.
Looks like you got a little something there.
I did a little boxing.
Yeah. You got to stir up a little bit.
It's been a while, Murph. But a couple guys that I see on your team too, and one of the guys we had on the program, we've had a couple guys on, but Yelly came on at the end of spring training, and Bryce Terang came on too. Man, this kid, when we got off with Terang, we're like, man, this guy's old school. Like he's, you know, talking about his dad and, you know, getting on top of the ball and stealing bases. Like his hair was on fire. Like, can you talk about him, what he's brought to that lineup so far? Also a guy like Blake Perkins, you know, you got some good players in this lineup.
We do. We have some talent. They're young. They're a little uncertain. Now we go through that part of the season where things start catching up to them. You know, they start reading their own clippings and you know how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
Natural, right? But a kid like Bryce, for instance, he's a supreme defender. He's supremely aware of how to play defense, not just the physical talent. He understands the game, the timing of the game. Now, offensively, people were questioning him last year. He had a big portion of the season in, but he didn't have great numbers, and people questioned whether he was the answer. Well, he set out in the offseason to prove him wrong, and he had a great offseason like a lot of guys do, but he carried it into spring training with intent and decided, hey, I'm gonna use the other half of the field. I'm going to hit the ball on the line. And now he's getting some results, and now he's getting on base so he can steal bases. Now everything is rolling together. And guess what? When the pitch dictates it, there's some air pull too.
Right. Right, dude. And right, air pull kind of happens.
Air pull and then get what you want.
Oh my God. Say it again, Murph. Say it again.
No, I hear you. Don't treat me like a puppet.
I love it. What about the guy Joey Ortiz, man? You guys got in the Corbin Burns deal. Man, this kid looks like he can play a little bit.
He does, man. He can really defend. You know, you can't deny, like, the ball gets close to him, he gets relaxed. You know what I mean? And he catches everything. He's never played third base ever, and it's a weird thing. But think about it. A guy that has that type of hands, they never get to third. They play short and second. Right. So we got him at third, and he's made that transition. He's learning every day. And you know what? He hits the ball really hard. He's a pretty good decision maker. He's under construction, a work in progress, and we're excited about it, you know?
Wow, dude, they got a lot of really good young players, a lot of good guys to be excited about. I think that'll be household names in Major League Baseball at some point here. A couple household names. I want to go back a little bit. I got two guys I want to touch on that really you had an impact, huge impact in their careers. Guys would always say to me, Murph, hey, give me the best conversation at first. And I'd, you know, hey, Lance Berkman's a great conversation. Hey, a great conversation, McGuire, Tony Gwynn.
I owe you for this, man. Yeah. I owe you for this. I got a lot of crap.
They say, who's the worst conversation you ever have? I was like, if you can believe it, Craig Counsell was the worst conversation ever. Like, actually wanted to fight him a couple times. I'd be like, hey, Counsell, way to swing. And he would say nothing to me. I'm like, actually want to, like, fight him, but I obviously can't because we're on national television. Like, but, like, it ruffled my feathers that bad. And I'm like, if you can believe it, Craig Counsell is one of the biggest assholes at first base. I have no idea why. And then one day when our careers were over, I said, Counsell, dude, I said, I got to ask you a question, bro. I said, all those times coming to first base, all the times we played against each other, I've talked to everybody. And Barry Bonds talked to me. You know what I mean? I had conversations with guys, you know, you think I never would, but you never say anything to me. It's like it drives me crazy. And he was like, Case, I'm so sorry, dude. He goes, it's Pat Murphy's fault. He's like, when I was at Notre Dame, he's like, if Murph saw us talk to another, the other team, everyone had to run the next day or I was benched. So he's like, I just got it ingrained in my soul as a baseball player. Like, you can never talk to anybody else. Be so serious. Get the sign from the third base coach. So, Murph, tell me about that, dude. You turned Craig Counsell in at times, one of the biggest toolboxes ever I've seen at first base.
Well, the story is true. You got to understand, Casey, I didn't know what I was doing. They gave this 27-year-old a head job at Notre Dame. It was a part-time job. They didn't want a good baseball coach. They didn't. It was a part-time job. They never went there. They turn it over. They're figuring, this guy can't screw it up. So I go in. I got the football mentality. I'm a minor league player, but I don't know shit about baseball, to be honest with you, or about coaching. But we have instant success, and like instantly. But what I didn't realize, I was abusing these young kids. Practicing 7-8 hours a day. It was like military camp. I would tell them, like, just say the words. Hey, guys, sorry, can't talk to you. I said, if it's your brother on the other team, you know what I mean? Put your hand on his shoulder, say, hey, I can't talk to you. My coach is an asshole. And they say that line over and over to me when I see the former players on the road, whatever. They say the same thing. Like, I know, can't talk to you. Coach is an asshole. And I thought that was right. So then you said it on national TV, you know what I mean? And I'm getting phone calls left and right. Murph, Casey just blew you up. I'm like, oh, shit.
That's what I said. I'm like, Murph must have had something in his pocket. These guys were so scared. They're like, they're going to carry the boats the next day or something. You know, they're going to sit in 31-degree water if they say something to anybody, you know?
I mean, I made him stand at attention at the national anthem. I mean, I went overboard with all that stuff, but the intent was right. The intent was like, hey, man, we're here to do this. These are young kids. You don't know.
Right.
But now in the big leagues, it's like, it's a happy fest. Everybody's, you know, afraid to offend anybody. Hey, you don't get signs anymore. You got to talk to your boy. You know what I mean? And it's like, it drives me freaking crazy. You know what I mean?
It is true. How has your when did your mentality start to change, Murph? Obviously, because the college game is so different than pro ball as far as like the grind of the year, playing every day, the failure's greater. You know, at what point do you feel like, you know what, I got to like dial it down or I got to, you know, change with the times?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I had a 2-hour discussion with one of my former players who you played against, and he's a college coach now. And Willie Bloomquist, I was just telling him, you know, Willie, sometimes you just got to step aside and realize those guys are going to play with your personality. They're going to play with your intensity. And we don't need to keep browbeating them about it. You know, it just took me time, Case. I mean, I was under construction, man. I'm a nobody from nowhere. And all of a sudden I get these jobs offered. And the worst thing that happens is you win. You freaking think you're good.
This guy knows what he's doing.
I'm a good coach, so I must keep doing this. You know, and totally inappropriate in so many ways. And then you get to Arizona State, everybody hates you. And then you win again. You're like, this is how I got to be. I'm a hated man. Somebody wrote an article one time, Black Hat Pat. You know what I mean? I'm like, that's me, I guess. So then you mature in life, and I've got some great friends, man. I got some great friends in the world, and they help me, and they, you know, I got Harvey Dorfman. I don't know if you ever ran across Dorfman.
Harvey was my mental coach. I literally believe if Harvey Dorfman didn't write that book, The Mental Game of Baseball, I never would have played in the big leagues. My dad bought it for me when I was 16. I fell in love with it. And when I got to the big leagues, I called Harvey. I'm like, hey, you know, my name's Sean Casey. He's like, yeah, I know who you are. And I was like, yes, you know, Harvey Dorfman knows who I am. And he became my coach. I called him all the time, and I'm so grateful for him. Yeah, please keep going with your experience, with Harvey. No,
I mean, Harvey, I met Harvey in 1989.
Wow.
In Phoenix. And it was a happenstance meeting, but we became very close. And I went to his house with him and Anita in North Carolina. He came to Phoenix every year. He came and sat on the bench in my clubs. And I got a tattoo on my back of him.
Wow.
Yeah, Harvey, he just made sense of my craziness. Yeah, there it is.
I got
a picture up in my house.
Do you?
Yeah.
Incredible, man.
It's unbelievable. We had Al Leiter on, and like they were just Okay, it's unbelievable how much he impacted your guys' generation of baseball, huh?
He really did, man. And he's still to this day. Well, at Notre Dame, everybody had to buy the book, and we went. We were waiting for the football team to get done with the indoor facility. They'd sit in a meeting. Council's part of this. 40 minutes and discuss a chapter. What does it mean to you? What about, and then over time, and I get to know the guy and I get to be around him every day or a lot of the days and talk to him. We became really, really close right up until his death. And then he introduced me to other people that are in the business. And I think we all have to be responsible for understanding the psychology of people because this is a people business. The analytics are great. They give you a lot of information, but this is a people business. And I think that's the key, you know, to keep trying to improve, keep look yourself in the mirror. How can I do it better? How can I change it? And I mean, to me, you know, that's what our mission is. And if we're coaches, we're like offensive linemen. We open up holes, you know what I mean? And the guys run through it. Now, they score the touchdown there, or they get the base hit. They're not going to give you credit. You can't look for the credit. And it might not be because of you. Was Dustin Pedroia good because of me? No. I rode his ass in the lineup every day. That's what I did for him. Right. He did the rest. You know, and what influence I had over him, no one will ever know. Even he doesn't know. The point is we're coaches. We're people of service. Open holes. They run through it. You go back to the huddle. Button your chin strap, get ready for the next play. You are not going to get credit. Somebody taps you on the shoulder and says, hey, you want to do this job next year? You go, yeah, okay, I'll do it.
I love that, man. That's where I was going next because I got a chance to play with Petey in 2008. Obviously, he was the MVP that year. I locker right next to him. I was expecting Dustin Pedroia Murph to take off his shirt. I was like, this guy must be slap-jacked, one of the most jacked human beings ever. He takes his shirt off. I'm like, you freaking serious, dude? You look like Leave It to Beaver. Like, you look like, I can't believe you're even a baseball player, let alone one of the better players in baseball. Like, you got to be kidding me. But then I heard him talk, and I'm like, this guy thinks he's 6'5", 280, slap-jacked. Like, I heard the mentality was incredible. Now, Murph, knowing you, and then knowing that Petey got 3 years of you at Arizona State, I got the chills saying this. I know there was an influence there, how this guy played the rest of his career. So, dude, tell me, why did you recruit Dustin Pedroia at 5'5", 105 with no muscle?
Can't run, can't throw,
bad arm. Yeah. Like, why were you like, hey, this is going to be my guy?
I got a great story for that. Well, it was my assistant coach that deserves the credit. He found him in Sacramento, right outside of Sacramento. He found him and said, Murph, we're not going to have to worry about our shortstop for 4 years. The good thing is he'll never be drafted. You know, he's miniature. He can't run. He can't throw. He's just he's a winner. He's you. Well, this guy was Italian too. So I said, oh, you're recruiting a local Italian, right? I get it. This kid better be able to play. Comes in my office first day, Pedroia. He's got a white T-shirt. What do you call those T-shirts? They're white cutoff T-shirts.
Tank top type thing. There's a derogatory term for them.
You say it. I'm not going to say
it. I'm not going to say it either.
I need the money.
So, sure enough, I usually trick people in. You guys,
we're too smart for that, Murph.
So, he walks in. He goes, hey, man, what do you think of my guns? I'm like, bro, I don't know who you are. Okay, because I don't always know the recruits' names. I was telling him that. I did know who he was. I said, I don't know who you are, but you better be able to pick up a ground ball. He said, don't you worry. Don't you worry. And I'm like, okay. And this kid, I mean, all I can tell you, you talk about getting chills.
Yeah.
To know him today as the same human being he was. He was a believer in himself, but to see the dad he is today, to see the human being he is today, he came and helped Bryce Terang. He came and helped Sal Frelick in the offseason. Just showed up 3 days at the complex, 9 a.m., and just worked his ass off with these guys. He said, what do you want me to tell him? Whatever. Let's talk to him. Those guys, and Sal being from Boston, loved him. You know what I mean? That was a hero. I brought Sal to his house and sat with Kelly and him and met the kids, and Sal was, like, paralyzed. He couldn't speak. But this guy was, I mean, he put Arizona State on the map because that became
the standard of what we were about. He would talk shit across the field, as you know. I mean, he would.
Oh, yeah.
He would take on anyone. I mean, this guy was, you know, he was something else. He's one of a kind. He's one of one. And to be part of that career is a blessing. And I went right back at him. Like, so me and him every day, I'd go out to shortstop and take balls and say, you know, he'd kneel down and grab the ball like a little leaguer. I'd be like, bro, I'm better than you. I would go out here and talk shit. We would talk shit to each other. And the practice would turn into everybody watching us, you know, compete with each other. But
yeah. One of the best shit talkers ever. The greatest thing was, I know you're a big ball buster in the clubhouses, and Petey was too. I mean, it was so funny to kind of watch him work his magic. You know, you got a good Pedroia story when you look back at that time and you're like, you know, man, it was just a good one that you think of.
Yeah. I mean, the first one I think of is, he's in a taxi, and he's pulling in the park. And there were taxis back then. I don't think there were Ubers, but he's pulling in the park with Kelly. And Kelly calls me and she said, you need to talk to Dustin here. He's right here. And I overhear him. He's talking to the guard. They're trying to get in the stadium in Colorado. And
that's right.
He goes, the guy goes, hey, you got to show me your pass. He said, pass. He goes, ask the pitcher last night when that thing went past him at 108, who I am.
Yeah, it was Jeff Francis. Ask Jeff Francis. Yeah.
So Kelly calls me. So the story is this. Kelly calls me and said, hey, it's his first week in the big leagues. He said, he's really down, Murph. She texts me first. He's really down. I want to call you. Just talk to him. He gets on the phone. He's like, yeah, Murph, yeah, I'm struggling. I'm like 1-for-20 or something. And he goes, you know, I'm hearing my shit on the radio that I shouldn't be here and blah, 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 blah. And he goes, yeah. I said, Dustin, is there a mirror close by? And he's like, yeah. I said, look in the mirror. You're 5'5". You're going bald at 22. You have no strength. You can't run. You can't throw. Why are you in the big leagues? Tell me why you're in the big leagues. Yeah, I know, Murph, but I can't. Dustin, you're Dustin effing Pedroia. You're in the big leagues because of that, because you're you. So go be you and stop this nonsense. The only formula is right inside of you. And he texts me back, the laser show will begin. He said, I'm going to put Red Sox Nation on my back. I still have the text message to this day. It's incredible.
That's incredible. That is incredible.
He said, I'm going to put Red Sox Nation on my back. He had been in the big leagues 10 days or 15 days.
Wow.
And that's a fact. And he did it.
And he did it, man. And he believed it. You know, talk about belief. We always say your stories, you know, your stories don't become powerful until you give them belief. You know, and Dustin Pedroia, the belief that he had in himself.
I'm using that today.
It's the truth, right? The power only comes from belief. And I really like the Dustin Pedroia's belief in himself. I get the chill saying it again because I stood next to it. And I was like, I tell people all the time, if anybody shouldn't have been a success, it was Dustin Pedroia. But guess what? The guy that thought he was going to be a success, had a belief greater than everybody else, that gave himself the power, was Dustin Pedroia, became one of the greatest second basemen in the history of the game. And I just, you know, like I said, it was incredible. And I'm, like I said, Murph, for you guys to have crossed paths at that time of his life and him to have the influence from you too, man, there's no doubt that's an incredible blessing.
Me incredibly, and the way he went about it, I'm just so thankful I didn't try to coach him out of that or
tell
him to stop that. And, you know, he's yelling across the field. We're playing Florida State. And Steven Drew's the shortstop. He's on the cover of Baseball America. And they're, you know, we used to take infield outfield before every series.
Right.
And they're taking infield outfield. And he's screaming, wait until I get out there. I'll show you what it's about. And Stephen Drew, like you know him, Case. Like,
yeah, real quiet.
Human. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's looking over like, who's the bat boy yelling at? And sure enough,
Pedroia goes out. We, for some reason, we took it second that day. And he goes out and puts on a show. And every throw he makes, he stares over at Stephen Drew. That's how you do it, you know? Does another one. Stephen Drew's like, what did I do? You know? And
he was so great, man. Oh, it's so great. Well, Murph, man, we can't thank you enough, brother, for coming on with us. And, you know, we know you got a game tonight and, you know, appreciate your time, man. But keep doing what you're doing, Murph. You're the right guy there in Milwaukee. I was so excited when you got the job. Every guy I've talked to a man, is so excited that you're there. And you got these guys playing at a good rate. And keep it going, man. And like I said, Chinch and I are Brewers fans. We'll be locking in with you guys.
Well, you guys keep in touch with me, man. I really appreciate it. It made my day doing this. So thanks, man.
All right, Murph. Thanks a lot, man. And don't let Vasallo slap him around if you have to, okay? Don't
worry about that.
Thanks, Skip.